This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Jewish Crypsis, Nose Jobs, and More, Part 2. We're going to pick up right where we left off, which was talking about Sander Gilman. And I failed to make the point the last time, so I'll make it this time. In that brief section that I read about him critiquing a Lubavitcher Jew who says the Jews are different and let's accept it and be thrilled about it, I wanted to point out, Gilman says one can only agree. He agrees that Jews are different and we should celebrate it. What he's disagreeing with is the rationale, the excuse for it. And he has a different excuse for it, or a different rationale behind it. And this is where the duality or the doublethink comes in, is at the end how he thinks it's a negative thing to call attention to or acknowledge Jewish physical differences, that it's an acknowledgement that Jews aren't normal. And he wants, that's the duality, is he wants to think to himself, he does think to himself, that Jews are unique and different, but he doesn't want anybody else to realize that or to think that. He doesn't want non-Jews to think that. There's more about Gilman now and his dishonesty, his Jewish identity. It was an article in the New York Times from 1998 titled "How Even Good Stereotypes, Quote Unquote Good Stereotypes, Can Be Bad: Myriad Subjects with a Common Thread, the Images We Build to Define Ourselves." When the Bell Curve was published in 1994, black groups angrily protested the author's suggestion that because black people score lower on intelligence tests, they have genetically inferior mental capacities. But amid the outcry, Sander Gilman spotted what he thought was an equally insidious assumption about Jews. Although the book seemed to pay Ashkenazi Jews a compliment by implying they are the smartest because they score highest on intelligence tests, Mr. Gilman, who studies stereotypes, was troubled. Quote, "I thought, this is really scary stuff," he said. "This pseudoscience has come back with a vengeance. Positive stereotypes are just as powerful a means of control as negative stereotypes." Well, it's interesting that the way he phrases that, a means of control, stereotypes as a means of control. Who's controlling who? He's trying to spin the stereotype. And he's trying to spin racial science as a pseudoscience. When, you know, I've been over this subject. I did many, many podcasts on this. And race science was a part of science, and it was more rooted in reality, objective truth, than any of the Jewish nonsense that has come since, the Jewish anthropology and this nonsense that this doublethink that now that Jews drive the narrative, it's just one example of doublethink after another that you can find when you poke at it. Later in the same New York Times article, it says, "Mr. Gilman said his interest in stereotypes grew out of his childhood in New Orleans. His mother was born in Poland. His father, a truck driver, was American-born of Russian descent," Russian Jew, I'm assuming there. But Mr. Gilman said he grew up as a, quote, "double outsider between black and white," unquote. "Even though I may have appeared white," he said, "I was along this fissure line because being a Jew in the South was not being white. the Ku Klux Klan was both anti-Jewish and anti-black. Not only that, but he was also acutely aware of the class distinctions between New Orleans' well-established German Jewish community and its newer Eastern European Jews. Even within his group, Mr. Gilman said, he, quote, realized that some people were whiter than other people. And I think the point of that is that, yes, Jews are hypersensitive to identity and to racial differences, even amongst themselves. Jews argue themselves about who's a Jew and what does it mean to be a Jew and who's a better Jew. This is interesting. His sense of the power of stereotypes was heightened by the civil rights movement when, as a teenager, he was involved in sit-ins in New Orleans and, quote, I saw what ugly stereotypes could do, unquote. Well, there he was. He was joining with the blacks because he saw he had more sympathy with the blacks than he did with the whites. So, you know, who set who apart? Was it the evil KKK setting apart the Jews, or was it the Jews setting themselves apart? I think it was the Jews that set themselves apart throughout history. That's the lesson of the Jewish problem, is that the Jews set themselves apart. Even if you're stupid and don't pay any attention to what the Jews are up to, they're busy passing and well aware of themselves as a separate group, separate from you, even if you don't recognize it. Enough about Sander Gilman. And let's move on here to something. I didn't make this point the last time, but I'll make it this time, that this duality, this doublethink about noses and nose jobs is the source of an awful lot of neuroticism, Jewish neuroticism. It literally drives them mildly crazy, this the reality of these big honking noses on their faces, and yet their desire to change them and to change into to look more like the people that they know that they're not, and that causes resentment. It comes out in a couple of different forms. It comes out as neuroticism in themselves, their own soul searching that they do, and there's a lot of that I'll cite in this part too. But it also comes out as resentment. As if they didn't already have enough racial animus toward whites, this just adds fuel to the fire. They resent the fact that whites forced them to get their noses changed. It's, of course, it's like I mentioned in the name game installment. Nobody forces them, really, to change their names. They change the names because they judge it to be in their best interests, and that's why they do it. And it's the same thing with nose jobs. Nobody's forcing them to pay thousands of dollars to go under the knife. They do it because they think it's going to benefit them. That's why they do it. Now, in this series here, it's quite a collection. As I said the last time, you can find all sorts of Jews talking about nose jobs and the Jewish nose, and a lot of it comes across as either some combination of confessional and soul searching, and just the Jews have a word called kvetching, which means basically whining and complaining, and a lot of it is that, and it's all centers around the fact that they have these strong feelings as a Jew, but they feel guilty about changing even just the outward appearance of themselves. They feel like it's not so much guilt about swindling or defrauding whites. It's they feel they are betraying their Jewishness. That's what they feel guilty about. And that's the difference between white guilt and Jewish guilt. White guilt being the guilt of being a racist, the guilt of caring too much about your own group or caring about your group at all. That's white, the source of everyday white guilt. Whereas Jews feel guilty for the exact opposite reason. They feel guilty if they're not being racist enough, if they're not caring enough about their Jewishness and doing enough for the Jews, thinking enough about what's good for the Jews or bad for the Jews. And so you see a lot of that. That's a common theme, one of the many common themes in this series of things that I'll link in the post for the podcast. Another common theme is this resentment toward the whites, and especially toward white women and the ideal of Aryan beauty. And they have a word, shiksa, that recurs over and over again. And shiksa is not a nice word. It means literally a non-Jewish woman, at least in a, that's the usual explanation for what that word means. It's a Hebrew word that comes from the same root as abomination, though. And so it's, Jews know that, and they know it's a rude word, and you can see it in the context. You just not even knowing that, and not even getting into the argument about what exactly its roots are, and you can get it from the context that it's used as a slur. It's used as an epithet, when Jews use it. And the equivalent is, Jewess is literally just means a Jew who's a woman or a girl, female Jew. But instead of saying Jew, you could say kike. That's a slur. It's an epithet. It's intended to show your disdain for them beyond just naming who they are. And the equivalent for a Jewish woman would be to call them a kikess. Now, you don't see the word shiksa very often, but certainly if you search for it, you can find it in mainstream publications and used by mainstream Jews that have it's their profession to write about things in mainstream publications, and they don't get in trouble for it. I mean, that's the point I'm trying to make here, is that it's difficult to imagine anyone writing Jew-S in a negative context, much less kike-S in the New York Times or, you know, any of these other mainstream publications, and not losing their job over it. But that's the that's an example of Jewish privilege, that that they can write this shiksa word, and it is an indication of an awareness of an otherness, of an other. That's what it indicates, you know, a non-Jewish woman, and also hostility towards these non-Jewish women. And it comes up because they're talking about these nose jobs, and the obvious thing about wanting to get the size of their nose reduced is so that they'll look more like a shiksa. And as I've said already, it's not because they want to be a shiksa. It's not because they want to be non-Jewish. It's just because they want to look like one. And that is in part because Jewish men are attracted to shiksas. In fact, there is this trope. It's another word for stereotype, but this is more real. It's running throughout Hollywood stories, and it's actually there's a listing for it on the TV Tropes website titled Shiksa Goddess. And it's described as this: the tendency of some Jewish male characters in media to be paired with possibly non-Jewish female characters, shiksa in Yiddish. These women are often blonde and blue-eyed. And recall that's the Aryan ideal. That's the opposite, the contrast of the Jewish look, the dark hair and dark eyes. Jewish society traditionally looks down on its members marrying outside the faith. There's a good example of the conflation of Jewishness with religion, when it's not really about religion, or marrying outside the faith. That's how they explain it to outsiders, but it's really more of a racial solidarity thing. And since early Jewish comedy writers were almost always male, it stands to reason that they would be the ones depicted marrying out. Actually, that doesn't stand to reason at all. You would expect, because men have the power and they're writing the stories, that they would portray somebody else as doing it. I think it gets portrayed as men because it reflects reality to a certain extent. It's Jewish men lusting after non-Jewish women. And Jewish women hate it. And it's usually Jewish women that use the word shiksa in describing their resentment of this situation. Another article here from the New York Times is a recent development, relatively recently in the last decade or so. This was an article from 1999 titled, "As Ethnic Pride Rises, Rhinoplasty Takes a Nosedive." It was basically reacting to the news that plastic surgery overall was down. But even though they didn't have hard numbers on Jews, whether it was down for Jews or not, they took it to mean that it was down for Jews because at the same numbers indicated that it was up for other ethnicities. It was up for Asians and Latinos. And so they figured, well, if it's up for them and it's down overall, it must be down for Jews because Jews were the number one consumers of plastic surgery. So just keep that in mind here in what I'm going to talk about. There's a whole series of different stories reacting to this. The heyday of nose jobs, experts agree, was in the 1960s and early 70s when the post-war baby boomers were teenagers. Parents of Jewish ancestry knew firsthand of the Nazi atrocities, were ever on the alert for stirrings of anti-Semitism. So their explanation here as to why there were so many nose jobs is that the parents wanted their children to not look so Jewish. They wanted them to not be recognizably Jewish. Not that they didn't want them to be Jewish. They wanted them to be Jewish and marry Jewish, but didn't want them to be recognizable. The physical characteristic that most set Jews apart was their noses. Right? And it's interesting that it's stated that plainly in this article. It's not a stereotype. It's not a imaginary thing by anti-Semites. It's just that's the way it is. But these they talk about how in the 1970s the technology was not so good, and it made all the women getting these surgeries look the same. And they describe it this way: little ski jump noses with bony ridges, the bony bridge scooped away. That was the technique that they used. They took the rounded out nose and made it a rounded in nose, like a ski jump. According to some doctor that they quote here, everybody wanted to look like a shiksa. New York Times, shiksa. According to a doctor, a plastic surgeon. This same doctor says now, though, the trend the opposite direction is that older women who have tired of their cute little ski slope noses want to turn back the clock and look like real people again. And that's an insult to white people, that looking white, of course, from a Jewish point of view, that's how they see it. You don't look like a real person. And that's part of the reason why they feel guilty and ashamed of doing this, wanting to look Jewish. Another article from the Jewish Journal titled Making the Cut. This was much later in 2005. This is a good description of it right at the beginning of the article. Forget the bar mitzvah. Today, nose jobs for American Jews have become so ubiquitous, a rite of passage, they're cliche. So again, acknowledging the reality not only directly of the nose job and the Jewish demand for it, but indirectly of the Jewish nose, because that's what's being fixed. Jews, who have always had a love-hate relationship with plastic surgery and their own appearance, have helped create a trend that has now exploded into the mainstream. That love-hate relationship, there's that duality I've been talking about. The love-hate relationship, it's they love themselves as Jews, and they hate the goyim, the shiksas, that they have to try and blend in with. Jews, out of their very desire to appear less Jewish, made plastic surgery acceptable to the very people whom they were trying to look like. Well, yeah, they were trying to look like. They were trying to fool. Quotes an expert here later in the same article. We straighten curly hair, dye dark hair light. We get very thin to disguise what we often imagine are Jewish coated thighs and hips. What we choose to treat are precisely the features that are culturally selected as our distinguishing physical traits. It's interesting wording there that makes it sound like it's imaginary. It's cultural. It's created by culture. You know, race is a social construct. In other words, those Jewish coated thighs and hips and hair and noses are not racial. Don't think they're racial. The same expert there. This is Virginia Bloom. writes that it was a survival mechanism, she's talking about nose jobs now, against anti-Semitic eugenic philosophies as much as an effort at social acceptance. Supposed ethnic identifiers like Jewish or Irish noses and Dumbo ears were a major target of plastic surgery in its early stages. In A Bridge Too Far, Jewish Teenagers Are Saying No to Nose Jobs in 2012, written by Rita Rubin. This was when it became really clear that this trend was against nose jobs were on the decline and amongst Jews. For generations, Jewish girls from well-off families underwent a special rite of passage. There's that phrase, rite of passage again. One that fell somewhere between their bat mitzvahs and their weddings, their nose jobs. But according to a set of recent statistics, that may be changing. Far fewer nose jobs are being performed than just a decade ago. It may reflect shifting standards of beauty and perhaps even Jews' diminishing dissatisfaction with what they see in the mirror. Quotes Melvin Connor, the author of The Jewish Body, another book about the Jewish body by yet another Jew. He says that this decrease reflects the changing attitude toward nose jobs. I think it's because of increased ethnic pride and a decreased desire to stop looking Jewish and blend in, he said, which is why rhinoplasty was invented. Yes and no. I think it is definitely a decreased desire to stop looking Jewish and to have to blend in. Jews don't feel like they have to blend in anymore. That's the bottom line. And it's not really about an increase in ethnic pride. The ethnic pride was always there. Another paragraph from the same article. The WASPs are becoming a minority, said filmmaker Gail Kirschenbaum. That means the old standards of beauty are changing. It's not about trying to have a waspy nose anymore. What is acceptable and considered beautiful is different now. Wasp is another one of those words that's a borderline epithet slur. It's anti-white, like shiksa is when it's applied to white people, and wasp is specifically talking about whites. It says, though, that it notes how the fashion models have changed, but even today you still don't see fashion models that have hooked noses, thick lower lips, the kind of features that are caricatures for Jews. Well, they're characteristic of Jews. They can be caricatured because those are the real characteristics. I mean, a caricature, the exaggeration in comic form, or as an artwork, doesn't work if it exaggerates the wrong things that are not true. The decline of the Jewish girl nose job was the sort of reaction to this article, this previous one I mentioned that was published in Tablet Magazine, the one by Rita Rubin. But this one is written and published in Jezebel.com, which is not a Jewish publication, at least not outwardly. And the name of the woman publishing it was Katie Baker. So here's a little bit of the name game, just a heads up for you, because when you look at other articles written by this Katie Baker, she talks about being Jewish. Not in this article, though. But as I said, it's really only Jews who feel comfortable writing about this. It's a sure sign, or it's one good indication that the person is Jewish, is the fact that they even write about such Jewish subjects. She writes, kids don't care so much about looking all-American, quote-unquote all-American anymore. And quotes somebody else, a plastic surgeon, saying, I think people actually don't want to assimilate as much. That's true enough. Later on, she talks about a video that's come out recently, and when she was writing in 2012. It's a music video, actually, titled Jucan Sam, a pun on Toucan Sam. In the video, the lead singer's dream girl will only date him if he gets a nose job. Quote, you've got a beak like Jucan Sam. I only go with guys with perfect upturned noses. I will love you till forever if you get your nose circumcised. Well, these are Jewish words put in the mouth of a shiksa. There aren't very many shiksas who think in those terms. If they recognize somebody as that Jewish and that alien from themselves, they would be turned off. They wouldn't want to be with them. This is the Jewish imagination and putting the words into a blonde girl's mouth. This music video was actually produced by a Jewish plastic surgeon who was trying to promote his own business. And he offered free nose jobs to all the members of the band. It's a Orthodox or a conservative Jewish band from New York of five Jewish guys or four Jewish guys. Only the lead singer, the guy who's actually singing in the song and wrote the song, actually took him up on the offer to get a nose job. But he got in trouble for it, or at least you know, some other Jews made a stink about this song. They describe it in the video clip, a yarmulke wearing Steinman, the lead singer there, tries to woo a blonde woman, but is rejected. That's how they describe it, that shortly. I mean, and blonde woman there is just basically shorthand for shiksa, or you know, the Nordic ideal, the Aryan ideal, blonde. It can be shortened, it can be abbreviated that down to one word, blonde. One of the negative reactions was, for hundreds of years, Jews have been depicted negatively with distorted features, including large hooked noses. Rosencrantz said that's an Anti-Defamation League director. It's a physical trait that is associated with the image of the Jew as someone who doesn't belong, someone who is alien. Well, the reason that image has that connotation to it is because of the way the Jews actually behave, the way that they're alien. There are people with big noses who aren't Jews who are just fine and don't feel this neurotic shame and guilt over their nose or about getting it changed. If they want to get it changed, if they don't like it, they go get it changed. No big deal. It's with the Jews that you see this torture that they put themselves through about betraying their Jewishness. And I have a couple of links that go to that that point as well. Let's see. Cutting off your nose despite your race, Jewish stereotypes, media images, cultural hybridity. This is a paper, an academic paper, actually, by a woman named Bernice Schrank. This is a paper about Jewish, quote-unquote, Jewish noses and how perceptions of them have varied in American popular culture in the 20th century. The importance of the, quote-unquote, Jewish nose is that it is perceived as one of the most obvious defining features of Jews. Jews with non-Jewish noses are able to pass, by which I mean being able to blend into the dominant culture and thereby being able to become invisible as Jews. And that's right. They can pass and they become invisible as Jews. They don't stop being Jews. There was a joke from one of the videos I'll link. Why do Jews have such big noses? Because the air is free. Seriously, though, as I said the last time, Jews are different. They're distinct from whites. Jews are aware of it, even if whites aren't. Jews are hyper aware of it. With some Jews, the difference is visible. For others, it's not, especially when they're mixed. The face is just the most prominent aspect of it. The nose is the most prominent aspect of the face. It's an important question, who's a Jew? And this, looking at appearances, is one way to tell. The answer sometimes is as plain as the nose on a Jewish face.